Good morning. Spend a little bit of time in Deuteronomy this morning, and then we'll make our way to Matthew. It is so good to be here. I was talking to Phil while class was going on. I said, I think we have hit a good example of the sound that the temple might have sounded like. A lot of goings and comings and people everywhere doing different things. And so that was a good experience. Thankful, as Rick said, for all those that helped make that happen. And, you know, the last thing we want anybody to leave here is to think that we are not dedicated to our kids. And we want them to have an understanding, to have some knowledge, obviously, of scriptures, and to have an experience. And that's a biblical thing. Obviously, how many times, I guess you could probably, somebody's probably done the math and counted up how many times the word remember is said in the Bible. And as we've talked about in the book of Deuteronomy, we as adults have a heavy responsibility, but a tremendous opportunity to do just that. There's a command over and over again that we teach so that it would be remembered and to be handed down. And a large portion of the Passover is the children are the youngest at the table asking the questions of why this night is different from any other. Over the last few weeks, we've been studying the book of Deuteronomy and using Deuteronomy 4, verse 1, Leviticus 18, 5, as our backdrop, so that you may live, or in Leviticus, so that you may live by them. And last week we started with the Ten Commandments and talking about man's relationship to God. And it's very easy sometimes for us to fall into the trap of thinking that Christianity is a man-to-God religion because we gather and we do these things every week, things that become as tradition. But honestly, the things that please God, we would have no idea what that would be, except that God has reached out to us through His Word and told us what is acceptable to Him. And so it is always a God-to-man religion. If it ceases to be that, then we have missed the point. He has reached out in the darkness into our filth, into our mistakes, into our sin, and lifted us out of it, as David puts. And so as we study Deuteronomy chapter 5 and verse 1, we see that Moses summons all of Israel and said to them, "Hear, O Israel." This includes heeding. This is listening. This is not just hearing the noise off of our eardrums. And it's kind of going in and making agreement that, yes, we're going to listen to what you have to say. And not only that, we're going to do it. In Acts chapter 17, Paul says there were some that said, you know, we buy into what you're saying. There were some that said, we'll hear you again. And there were some who mocked. And those are the responses that we have. And only one is truly acceptable to God. In Deuteronomy 5, verses 9 through 10, we see that God, even in the wrathful God that we sometimes call Him in the Old Testament, is more concerned with kindness than punishment. Verse 9, "You shall not bow down to them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing steadfast love to thousands of those who love me and keep my commands," echoing what Jesus, of course, said here and in the Gospels, that if you love me, you will keep my commands. And the ultimate example of that is Jesus. This morning, we should be grateful, almost uncontrollably grateful, that God came in flesh to show kindness and love the first time. For He will return a second time, looking to bring justice and punishment and the wrath upon evil. And we've all been given a tremendous opportunity through the sacrifice of Jesus to know the kindness of God to thousands upon thousands. Deuteronomy 5 and verse 12 talks about observing the Sabbath and keeping it holy. We mentioned it in our conclusion last week that this is what Jesus did, right? This is one of the commands in the middle that overlaps. There's a benefit of honoring God on the Sabbath day, but there's also a rest that we give to our fellow man. In fact, this is world-changing that if you go on to read there, it mentions the slave. A Jew could not make a slave or a Gentile do his work. They were supposed to have a Sabbath as well. And so thousands of years before slavery began to be abolished, we have this rule that's made, you will give them a rest day and even the animals, right? The treatment of animals. But Jesus kept the Sabbath. By 3 p.m. on that Friday, what had he said? It is finished. Thinking about creation, it is finished. It is complete. The work is done. He redeemed the time. This is the one commandment that talks about time. There is a time constraint to observing the Sabbath. He redeemed the time, as Paul says in Ephesians 5:16. He redeemed it in such a way that we, slaves to sin, would benefit. Deuteronomy chapter 23, it talks about the first slave laws of you will not return a slave to his master. He will stay with you and you will treat him well. This is earth moving stuff, things that we would not think about for many, many more centuries. And of course, Jesus is the tremendous example. Deuteronomy chapter 5 and verse 16, honor your father and your mother as the Lord your God commanded you, that your days may be long and that it may go well with you in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. Jesus speaks of this in Matthew 15 when he warns them. He says, you know, you've been mistreating your parents. If you mistreat your parents, that's a huge step in disrespecting God. God does not require that we love our parents. God does not require the impossible. It may be difficult sometimes, depending on your relationship with your parents, to love them, but we are called to honor them. And so it makes that law different. It's interesting, in Leviticus 19 and verse 3, the mother comes first. So here in Deuteronomy, it's honor your father and your mother. Leviticus, it's honor your mother and your father. And so here we see in the Torah what happens. Equality. These are equal. They are both to be honored in a, as we know, a patriarchal dominated society. And in the craziness that people can look at the Bible and go, oh, that's a sexist book. It's all outdated. It's old. And yet it was the revolutionary book. We can look to the day that Jesus died, buried, and resurrected as the day that the revolution began. And true change had come in flesh. Jesus honored his mother in John chapter 19 when he looks down and entrusts her to the disciple whom he loved. And then the main part of our lesson today is Deuteronomy chapter 5, 17 through 18. You shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, and you shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor, and you shall not covet your neighbor's wife. You shall not desire your neighbor's house, his field, or his male servant, or his female servant, his ox, or his donkey, or anything that is your neighbor's. That's 17 through 21. It is interesting to note that you shall not steal is the open-ended verse. It is a verse that talks about there are no qualifications of that. We'll just pause for a station identification. But it is a verse that's not qualified. There is no you shall not steal in this situation, you shall not steal in this situation. It is a you shall not steal. It's almost like it's ready and preparing for what we call situational ethics. Well, in this circumstance, this is okay. And here we see the God of the Bible going, no, that's not acceptable. And really, all the other commands that go before it and how we treat other human beings can be wrapped up in the idea of theft. We saw in Deuteronomy 5 through 17, you shall not steal. Matthew 21, 13, what does Jesus call those in the house of God? You have turned it into a den of robbers. You are thefting people. You are robbing the poor. If you don't think that's a big deal, you have not read the prophets. For every one of them says, you could do all these things. You can have your customs. You could have your traditions. You could even do the things God's commanded you to do. And yet, if you do not love your brother as yourself, regardless of their status in society, you have missed all of the commands. You've missed them all. You see, coveting leads to stealing. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 27. Matthew 27. And verse 18. Why did they offer Jesus up? Verse 18, 27, Matthew, for he knew that it was out of envy that they had delivered him up. You see, Jesus in the process, keeps the Ten Commandments, while those who sought to get rid of him broke every one of them in Holy Week. We're not even talking about life, but in a week. They coveted still the authority of Jesus. They had set themselves up in the place of Moses. You see, stealing a person or anything that belongs to another is wrong. It was the authority that they wanted. Matthew chapter 23, verses 10 through 12. Let's turn over there together. Matthew 23, 10 through 12. Neither be called instructors, for you have one instructor, the Christ. The greatest among you shall be your servant. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted. Jesus teaches them that the one thing they were not prepared to do was the one thing that would give them what they truly wanted, was the authority of Jesus. Instead, Jesus turns to 12 people that none of us would have picked and says, because you are of humble beginnings, fight against the way man sees things, and you will be exalted. You will be lifted up. Only authority belonged to Jesus. And we see in his life that he was willing to give it to people who were not intellectuals, who were not the elite. In fact, quite the opposite. Adultery is the stealing of a spouse closely related to idolatry. See the book of Hosea. God wanted Hosea to get a taste of what it's like to be God, who people dedicated themselves to him over and over and over and found themselves doing what? In idolatry, breaking the rule over and over again. Jesus in Matthew chapter 24, verses 1 and 2, he says, this temple that you don't just worship at, that you worship, will be torn down. These Romans who you think have authority, these Pharisees who you think are authoritative, right? He says, unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees, scribes and Pharisees, you will not enter in the kingdom of God. And the answer to that by many of the regular Joes would have been, that's impossible. And that's why it's so important that only God can do the impossible. False witness. We know that Matthew chapter 26, verses 59 through 61. What did they seek out? They sought out false witnesses so they could condemn Jesus, right? Here we are, checking the box. The only person who told the truth, regardless of the outcome, was the one who had the most to lose, but was the most willing to give it up. You see, murder is stealing a life. That's what they sought to do. But it's difficult to steal something if someone's just willingly giving it away. We know that John 3:16 is a beloved verse because it tells us that he loved us so much that he gave. You see, that's what love is. It's sacrificial. I'm still learning that. I've been married a good little while, and every day I get a reminder that I don't know as much about that as I think I do. And so the response to that is the most important, right? When we're faced with our ignorance, how do we respond? Do we respond in humility and the fact that, oh yes, I've got way more to learn? Or do we get angry? Do we get upset? Well, we see that example as well. Turn to Matthew chapter 26. We'll look at verse 6 through 15. You see, we've seen the smart, the elite, the intellectual, the Pharisees break all of the Ten Commandments, break the two greatest commands. And yet in Matthew chapter 26, we find the example of keeping both commands so well that even Jesus himself talks as though this will be talked about for the rest of time. Verse 6, now when Jesus was at Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, a woman came up to him with an alabaster flask of very expensive ointment, and she poured it on his head as he reclined at table. And when the disciples saw it, they were indignant. And we know in other passages that the disciples were not alone. They were with the leaders, right? Their response was the same as the leaders, indignant about this woman. Why this waste? You see, in John's gospel, he includes the detail that this is Judas. This is Judas's response. But Jesus, aware of this, said to them, why do you trouble the woman? For she has done a beautiful thing to me. For you always have the poor with you, but you will not always have me. Redeeming the time, in pouring this ointment on my body, she has done it to prepare me for burial. Truly, I say to you, wherever the gospel is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will also be told in the memory of her. You see, this woman kept the two greatest commands at the very same time. She loved God more than her most precious possession. She loved God so much that she was willing to go in amongst all these men whom she knew would judge her and look down on her and didn't have a high value of her. But it didn't matter. She was going to see the person who knows truth, who embodies truth, and loves truthfully. You see, there are a lot of people in the world who point to the church and go, "Well, I just can't stand those people. And they're not really worth my time." And what they're saying is their thoughts about me are more important than the value that Jesus puts on me. There couldn't be anything more from the truth. See, she was not willing to let anybody stand in her way of getting to the one person who could save her, who could rescue her. And she kept the two greatest commands better than anybody else that week. She was committed to Jesus. Verse 14, the response, the one of the 12 whose name was Judas Iscariot went to the chief priests and said, "What will you give me if I deliver him over to you?" He didn't even go with a price. "So whatever you give me, I'll take whatever." You see, we do the same thing. We trade out the precious Son of Jesus for whatever the world will give us. Even though we know whatever the world gives us is full of heartbreak and will only let us down. And they paid him 30 pieces of silver, and from that moment he sought an opportunity to betray him. When we see people living out the two greatest commands, what's our response? Because it's not what it's about them. It doesn't reveal their motive. It reveals the most about us. And I can tell you that I've been there. I've seen people live the way they're supposed to live. And my response was to covet that, which then led to jealousy. And then I wanted to bear false witness. Well, you know, they're not who they think they are. I mean, everybody's got their issues, right? And so, you know, I'm better than them. And then maybe I didn't physically want to lay hands on them, but I've certainly done enough to hurt their reputation. So I'm tired of responding that way. I want to be the person who lives out those two greatest commands, regardless of what anybody else thinks or does. You see, in Deuteronomy chapter 23, verse 15 through 16, it says, "You shall not return the slave to his master. You shall love him. You should treat him with hospitality. He is now a member of your family." And is that not what Jesus has done? He does not. He refused. He did everything in his power to keep us from returning back to slavery. John chapter 8, right? We've never been enslaved to anyone. After Jesus tells them, "The truth will set you free." You see, the comfort of being a slave to whatever desire we have oftentimes trumps the beautiful sacrifice that Jesus has made for us. This morning, I plead with you, wherever you are in your walk, I would be willing to guess that most here are followers of Jesus. That's a tremendous opportunity and blessing to do so. But we are all tempted, just like the Israelites in the wilderness, to look back at our slavery and go, "Man, look at all the great things we had back there. Man, it's kind of tempting to go back to that." And Jesus says, "I've died so that you never have to go back to that fake master who cannot give you what he says he can give you. The one who accuses you of having no value, and the only thing that you have value in is how hard you work or how good you are at it." And Jesus comes along and says, "I love you because that is who I am." So whose value, whose accusation, whose belief are you going to buy into? Because that's simply it. That's the choice we make. You see, Jesus had a borrowed tomb. but we all will have a borrowed tomb. That's not the end. That's not where we're going to be left. Jesus is going to call us all to that day of judgment one day. And how you feel about that, once again, reveals more about you than the person sitting next to you. We would love you to leave here this morning looking forward to the day that Jesus returns and set all things right. But that's your choice. And we can't make you, and we can't force you, but we can encourage you. And that's what we're going to do right now in just a moment when we sing. That's what the song is for. That's what our tradition says. It's a song of encouragement to encourage you to make whatever decision you need to make. And we all have it. When we're faced with the truth, we have a decision to make every time. And so it's a rededication every day we get up, committed to God, what is truly His. This morning, if you've never done that in your life, you've not given that to Him, why not today? It would be a wonderful, perfect day, a tremendous example of what Jesus has done in our lives. If there's a way that we can assist you, we encourage you now as we stand and sing.